We are honored to have on the radio with us legendary author and actress Catherine Lee Scott. Hi, Catherine.
Oh, good morning, Ray. Thank you so much for calling me.
Well, we are honored to have you on the show. And my partner, Cindy, would like to read to our audience, once again, some of the great accolades in your resume, if you don't mind.
Fine, that would be lovely.
Okay. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Cindy.
Hi, good morning to you. Well, let's see. Catherine, for any of you that were Dark Shadows fans, back, I believe this was in the 60s, but I was one, but I don't remember which
1966
set of years.
To 71.
In late 60s. Okay. She played four roles on Dark Shadows. And the main one, I guess, was Maggie Evans, but a lot of people know her as Josette Dupre, who was, she was one of Barnabas's wives, I believe, Barnabas Collins. She also played Lady Kitty Hampshire and Rachel Drummond. And then she wrote the Dark Shadows Memories companion to the 25th anniversary tribute for the show. She has also written four other novels, Dark Passages, Down and Out in Beverly Hills. I'd love to hear about this one.
It's a mystery novel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Jinxed, a memoir, and Last Dance at the Savoy. And now we also have a novel called September Girl that is coming out. And she's going to be in the MGM feature. She was in House of Dark Shadows. But you're going to be in a movie coming up, right?
Actually, there are several films that are just not in release yet, but I did the new Woody Allen film called A Rainy Day in New York, and that just premiered at Deauville, so that'll be opening in Europe, and let's hope it opens here in the United States. And September Girl, of course, is coming out this month, the book.
Oh, that's great.
So, Catherine, you were born in Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Yeah, what was it like being, growing up in that environment? Then you make it to, the coast, and we're all
gosh, I've written about that. Growing up in Minnesota, I grew up on a farm. It was idyllic. I mean, it was a wonderful childhood. But I really wanted to be an actress. I think I wanted to be an actress and a writer since I was in second grade. Mm-hmm. I wrote a play about George Washington. I gave all the best lines to Martha Washington and then played the role.
Yeah.
I think that was got me started. But when I graduated from high school, I decided, you either go to one coast or the other, it seems. And I decided to go to New York. I was a scholarship student at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And it was while I was going to school that I started screen testing for Dark Shadows. So Dark Shadows was really my very first job.
What was it like being on that? It was a gothic drama, like a soap opera. What was it like?
At first it started out as sort of a romance, a bodice ripper, as they call it. A gothic romance about this family living in Cullenwood, and very eccentric. And then Dan Curtis got the idea to introduce a werewolf. And I think it was because the ratings were dipping, and they were going to cancel us after 13 weeks. And he just decided to go for broke and introduce Barnabas Collins, which was a stroke of genius.
Yeah. It really was. And as a kid watching the show, it was kind of scary. I mean, it was filmed a little differently. When you watch it, it didn't seem like a normal drama show. It was just filmed differently. Very odd, I thought.
Well, that was what was so innovative about it. I mean, there were several things that Dan introduced. One, the idea of doing an anthology series. We drew on the best of world literature, everything from, Scarlet Letter to Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, Turn of the Screw, Henry James. And we drew on those stories, and we went backward and forward in time. Another innovation is that we functioned like a repertory company. I played four different roles. Everybody played multiple roles in different time periods. And Dan convinced the network that the audience would just go along with it, and they did. They loved it. And the other innovative thing, of course, was to introduce a vampire, introduce the paranormal, but make it palatable. We were in somebody's living room, and we were sitting there with a grandmother and her grandchild on the sofa watching us. So we appealed to several different generations of a viewer. I think I've already named about five or six things that were really very different that set Dark Shadows apart from the other soap operas of the day.
Do you think that if you were a writer on that show, would you have changed anything?
Oh, you know, right now I'm engaged in reading the 32 novels that Marilyn Ross wrote. Beginning in 1966, the last was written in 1969, but they used all of the characters from Dark Shadows, but they went off in different plot lines. And now that I'm reading some of those plot lines, I'm thinking of all of the other things that we could have done on Dark Shadows. The sky was the limit. We could do absolutely anything, just like Gene Roddenberry did with Star Trek. Mm. You could go way into the future, and you could still tell allegorical, you know, classic tales.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we did on Dark Shadows. And I think as a writer, I would have embraced that opportunity. There was nothing we couldn't do.
Is there any particular writing style growing up as a young girl that you looked at and said, I want to write like that?
Oh, what a great question. I love mystery. I love the great women detective writers. Obviously, beginning with Agatha Christie and Dorothy Sayers and Nagayo Marsh, P.D. James, Marjorie Elliott, I've read them all, Josephine Tay, I love them. And I think the reason why I started writing my mystery series, the Jinx series, beginning with Down and Out in Beverly Hills, is because I love the idea of using mystery as sort of the backbone of the story. So mysteries, I really do love. And now I realize that September Girl, the book that's coming out this month, is also a mystery at its heart. I'm not sure that every good story doesn't have a mystery. I think it does.
Well, I think it's good to have a mystery. I think it helps the mind, you know, it just kind of keeps you engaged in what you're reading.
Yes, I think.
Catherine,
you're always... writing a mystery gives you so many opportunities to bring in all kinds of things, but you've got a backbone to the story. This is the mystery that has to be resolved by the end of the book. In September Girl, for example, I really wanted to write about... I mean, and this happens to all of us. I mean, there are things that happen when we're young, and then we kind of put them in the back of our minds to revisit later when we can face it or deal with it or whatever. And I have a woman who does go back to face something that was traumatic. And everything that she thought existed or happened was completely wrong. It was totally different. There are at least 5, 6, 7 reveals, big surprises she could not have imagined. So the mystery is really in uncovering those things, and then how do you deal with things that you can't go back and redo or undo? That's something that fascinates me.
Well, you know, the mystery of the human mind is one of the most untapped...
Right. Well, what do you enjoy reading? Do you like mystery? Do you like thriller?
I like a little bit of everything, but I love sports stories, and I like...
Ah, all right. Well, that's something I haven't tackled yet.
I like the mind...
Yeah.
Mind over matter, you know, like for example, you're on the mound pitching to somebody and you've got to somehow get through an inning when you're very fatigued and your body doesn't want to go anymore and you have to find a way to make the big play or get something done in a crucial situation. You know, those types of things, you know, like kind of like, I guess maybe in a different way, Rod Serling wrote a lot about stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. Aren't those wonderful? Now, he was a contemporary of Dan Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
They knew each other. And I think that Dan had huge respect for Rod Serling. I mean, we revere him now, well over 50 years later, since he did Twilight Zone.
Right.
Those were wonderful stories.
Oh, my goodness. And they had a moral to them.
Well, that's it. They were allegorical as well.
Mm-hmm. They really were. Is there a particular episode of The Twilight Zone that resonates with you?
Well, there's the one where it's the little boy and his grandfather and the train comes through.
Willoughby.
Yeah, that one I love. And I think everybody's favorite is the guy who looks out the window and sees an ape on the wing.
Oh, yeah. It's William Shatner. Yeah.
All right, well, that's two of them. And I mean, I really do love those, but I also love Alfred Hitchcock. I think one of the best stories was the one where the woman calls the police and says that her husband is killed. There's obviously been an intruder, and they can't figure out where's the weapon? And she's got the weapon roasting in the oven.
Oh yeah.
I mean, she killed him with frozen meat.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, Hitchcock was something else.
I just think it's the funniest thing in the world when she asks the detective to stay for dinner.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, there are some great writers like this. Roald Dahl is another one. Very unexpected.
Right,
yeah.
Absolutely right. Would you?
So I love that sort of thing. And look, if I can achieve anything anywhere near those kinds of gold standards with September Girl, I would be thrilled.
When you sit down to write something,
yes.
Do you like to sit in an absolute quiet environment? Do you like to have a little radio on? Do you like to have nature?
Now, that's really interesting. I just started writing some historical fiction, and it takes place in 1910. And you won't believe it, but I've been listening to John Coltrane and Miles Davis and Thelonious Monk while writing.
He's grinning right now.
And I have no idea why that works for me, but it does. There are other times when sitting in absolute silence is the best.
Wow, yeah, you know, I listen to a lot of John Coltrane.
I mean, I have a chair that I sit in it's just a very old, wonderful leather chair, and I write with a laptop, and I'm happy as can be when I'm sitting in that chair writing.
When you write, do you just let your fingers go, and then you make the corrections later, or are you one of those people that never make any mistakes?
I just cannot move on until it's right.
Okay.
I really can't. And, you know, you asked the question about where people need to be to write. There are some wonderful stories. Who is it? Was it Edna O'Brien? Somebody like that would choose the most uncomfortable place to sit and write, like in a windowsill.
Oh, wow.
And had to be uncomfortable while writing. And Agatha Christie, who went with her husband, who was an archaeologist, went all over the world. But she always wrote at a plain. She liked sitting at a plain wooden desk.
I think
and
it would
writing.
Be.
And she would set up her writing table wherever.
Yeah, I think back in those days before computers, I think it would be very difficult to write because. We have computers now that can fix mistakes very quickly. Back in the day, when you put a piece of paper in a typewriter and you made a mistake, you had to go either use whiteout or whatever to correct it. I'm so used to computers. So, I mean, making the transition, do you prefer computers or did you like to write freehand?
You know, I invariably start with pencil on legal pad for at least as I'm writing a synopsis and then I turn to my computer. Those of us who are of an age to still write cursive, I think we can't not do it. What astonishes me is that I actually know writers who can write on their iPhones. I simply
wow.
could not do that.
No, it would be
I
to me.
I could not do it. I need a desktop computer or a laptop, but writing on an iPhone, I couldn't do it.
Generally, how long would it take to write a standard book? I mean, I know all books are different.
The research, one that requires a lot of... I figure a year, maybe because I'm a farmer's daughter, I think in seasons. But I think, about a year. It does take that long.
Is there any particular topic that you've kind of wrestled with that you haven't written that you might want to do in the future?
Yes, and that's the book that I've just started. I mean, September Girl is now finished. It's out there. So the next book I'm writing is about a woman in 1910. Again, this is going to be a mystery series. And she's based on my great aunt, who was a traveling sales lady and sold electrical corsets and girdles, but she was also a suffragette. And she's a fascinating woman, and I found a way to incorporate everything I know about her and create quite a different person, who's also involved in mystery. So that's been really fun. Just a totally different thing. But again, I'm not sure that we aren't always exploring the same things, whatever era we're writing in or whatever characters we choose to tell our story. I think you're always looking for some sort of, there's a theme in you that you feel compelled to write and explore.
Yes, Catherine Lee Scott, our guest. Do you think sometimes in the subconscious of the writer's mind, whether they're aware of it or not, those feelings come right through their fingertips?
Yes. Yeah. That's why I tell anybody to write. I write to be published. I don't write as a hobby. But I encourage anybody to write, because one is astonished at what you never thought you knew, and then it pops up on the page and you think, where did that come from? How did I know that? You learn such a lot about yourself by writing.
Right. There are certain fears and trepidations that we all have, and sometimes people are a little afraid to explore those darker recesses.
Fear of the unknown.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what's in the dark? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah.
There are a lot of those types of things out there, and there's some things that are very sensitive that some people don't want to delve into, so to speak. So,
right.
But I think sometimes on paper, you can write those things and not, maybe it's easier to do that than it would be to have a verbal conversation.
I find it so. Mm-hmm. I actually use that line. I don't know that it's still in September Girl. Oh, it's, you know what? There's a line that I took out, but I wrote it and it was in the book until the last draft. But I just said, I wrote something I find easier to do than conversation. I find writing many times more easier.
When you write about somebody who's still alive, do you watch that person, or do you just listen to what they say, or do you take all of it into account and get a feeling of your subject that way?
Well, yeah, I think that you do. I'm trying to think of, because I've written a lot of nonfiction. I've probably written a bit more nonfiction than fiction. So I have written about real people. You do try to get into their heads. But then, I'm also an actor. I think I use almost everything I know as an actor in my writing. I never forget, as an actor never forgets, that you have to use all of your senses. So often when a writer, a neophyte writer, ignores that there's a sense of smell, there's touch. It's not just what you see and hear. So using all of the senses and writing in scenes, that's something else, of course, that I do, I think, instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
I write in scenes. I visualize. I can see it happening, and I just feel like I'm writing what I'm seeing.
Catherine, where can people get more of your information? I mean, let's give her.
Oh, I do have a website. It's myfullname.com, Catherine Lee Scott, KatherineLeeScott.com. And also, if you go on Amazon and just type in my name, up pops all of the books that I've ever written. I've written a number of nonfiction books on caregiving, and I'm a national spokesperson for a family of diseases that are one of which my husband had. So I speak on behalf of Cure PSP. He had progressive supranuclear palsy. And I've written about caregiving for somebody, a loved one who has a neurological disease. All of these are what's known as prime of life neurological diseases.
How did you deal with that?
Oh, like anything else, a step at a time, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's even more than that. I mean, everybody handles those types of situations differently. I mean, what, as you went day to day with that, did you read more about it?
The question you have just asked is actually what compelled me to write the book. One of the very first doctors that my husband went to said, told me to keep a daily journal. He said, not just because I'm going to be prescribing medications off label, and you should keep track of what the reaction is, but also it is a progressive disease, so it'll be helpful to you to see what that progression is and deal with it. And I knew what he was asking me to do and why, and it turned out to be therapeutic, turned out to be so informative in the way I was able to, in the way that I was able to,
That's okay.
Worst nightmare here. I had to learn how to deal with the challenges on a day-to-day basis, because every single day there is a new normal.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you deal with it? Well, that's what I write about in those four books on caregiving. It's how to make the most of the time you do have with somebody. On the one hand, you're blessed because you know you do have some time, but then how to make the best use of that. And life doesn't stop until it stops. So you really have to push those buttons in your head that allow you to open yourself to facing things that you just never want to face.
Yeah.
I mean, you simply have to do it for your sake and for the benefit of the one you're taking care of.
Did you ever wonder in your mind, after this is over, meaning where we're at now, what's next?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. And it's very interesting that in September Girl, which is not my story at all, it's not about me, but that is what this woman that I've written about faces. And she is asking herself, what next? And you look for answers everywhere. And then she realizes that she... At this time in her life, if not now, when, she needs to resolve this issue from her past that has really affected her entire life. And thank God she does before it's too late. So, I think there are just two really compelling questions when you're writing. One is what if, and the other one is what next.
Catherine Lee Scott, our special guest. You are listening to WCSB Cleveland, The Ray Carr Show. And Catherine, if there's anything you'd like to say to your fans out there that were diehard, Dark Shadow fans, what would you like to say to them?
You mean you want to go? Oh well, here's I've been invited as a guest at the International Film Festival in Tarrytown, New York, and they're going to be showing House of Dark Shadows, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this coming year, and they're going to be screening it, and I'm going to be talking about it. And if you if you go on my website, there is a way to send me an email to get in touch. And now, of course, for those real diehard fans of Dark Shadows, they're going to be very happy to know that there's a new incarnation of Dark Shadows that CW is developing. So we'll see what happens with that. But the Dark Shadows universe, like the Marvel universe and the Star Trek universe, just keeps going.
Catherine, was there ever a show during that time period, 66 to 71, that you wanted to be on a different show? You'd still work on Dark Shadows, but did you ever want to make a guest appearance on somebody else's program?
Oh, my gosh. Well, let me see. What was around then? I can't think of anything in particular except for Star Trek. I thought that was such a wonderful show. And then I ended up doing an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, so I got my taste of it.
Night Gallery. I
played Nuria, leader of my Mintaken people. But I'm trying to think if there was any other show. Nothing comes to mind. I who was still working then and doing wonderful things. Lucille Ball. I met her just once in person. I always thought it would be wonderful to work with her. She was just immensely talented. And she still had a show. I love comedy, so it would have been fun to do some more comedy. One of my favorite roles was as Sally Decker in Police Squad. That was really great fun. Surreal comedy.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy comedy.
Catherine, thank you for your time. I know you're very busy, and I sincerely appreciate your time. Our audience appreciates it, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you for having me on. I've enjoyed this. It's been a wonderful, wonderful little chat.
All right, Catherine, we had just a couple other questions. Cindy had, she wanted to bring up a good point.
Yeah.
Hi, Catherine. I just noticed that in your bio, it mentions that you had a very lengthy run in the West End with James Stewart in Harvey.
I told you I love doing comedy. Yes, that was one of the highlights of my life. Jimmy Stewart and I became really close friends. We did Harvey at the Prince of Wales Theatre in the West End of London, and we were working during what's known, I guess, as the Irish Troubles. We had bomb scares constantly, and he was very protective of me. He was like the wonderful cowboy who would come to my dressing room and pick me up, and every Wednesday and Saturday matinee days we would have lunch together. And we sat at the same table, at the same chairs, ordered the same meal for 7 months. And we just had the most wonderful conversations, that wonderful voice of his telling me all of those great stories about Marlene Dietrich and Greta Garbo and Joan Crawford. And I just adored the man. And we stayed in close touch. Until he died. I ended up going to L.A. to do a television series, and I ended up living just a few blocks from where he and his wife Gloria lived. And so I saw a fair amount of him, and I just count him as one of my great friends.
That's really
sweet.
Well,
it's a great story. Catherine, again, thank you so much, and hopefully we'll have you back on very, very soon.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be lovely. Thank you both. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Ray.
Oh, you're very welcome, Catherine. Thank you for coming on.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Catherine Lee Scott.